I think I started going to dance gigs in probably 2016, and prior to that, had mainly been like a punk gig attendee. But I just met so many people, and I think so much of what made me fall in love with dance music and going to dance gigs was the community. Like, yes, I love dance music and I love listening to dance music, but for me, the community in Perth is so unparalleled. It feels like anytime you walk into a dance music gig, you see so many people you know, but even the people you don't know, it feels like you have this kind of underlying sense of comfort with them and support. And I think that's so much of where my love for dance music stems from.
Welcome back to another episode of First Pressing, the show where we showcase local record labels and label heads. This week, we're sitting down with Peter, Georgie, and Connor from Midnight Elevator.
It shouldn't innately be worse because it's here, whereas like we assume that something that's from Europe or from America is better, when I think a lot of the time when people do come here, they're pleasantly surprised by the energy of both the artists and the crowds.
Yeah, everyone's coming from different backgrounds in terms of how maybe professional they are.
I think we all just kind of collectively kind of sent the same message to each other over Facebook, being like, oh, we should release some music, you know.
Midnight Elevator makes it their mission to showcase the original and diverse sounds of Boolloo's underground electronic music scene. Since their inception in July 2020, Midnight Elevator have placed a strong emphasis on local producers and live artists. You're listening to Season 1 of First Pressing.
As a collective is us, like the administrators. I'm Peter, which is PDMC is my artist name. Connor is Late Night Protocol, who's also here. Say hi, Connor.
Hello.
And Georgie is also an administrator. And then in terms of acts, we've released tracks for Cooper Cooper, most recently Shy Time. We have a lot in our compilations. Like, each compilation has 9 local artists, and it's all local artists. They're all from here. So, I mean, I can run down the list if you like.
Yeah, well, I was curious about it because I thought of Midnight Elevator, or at least one of my first, you know, exposures to you was when you were a feature album here at RTR-FM. And it was incredible to see the depth and the differences between sort of acts and how you made a compilation gel together. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the compilations. How do they come together? Is there a process for choosing tracks, or are people, you know, focusing on a certain target or thing? Tell me about them.
I mean, yeah, it's one of those ones where it's almost trying to herd cats, but it's quite difficult to try and get a compilation together just because everybody works on such different time schedules. But regarding the releases, it's essentially we just kind of put a call out, really, and see kind of what comes our way. We kind of set a deadline, and if you can get something to us by this date, then cool.
And going back to like how Midnight Elevator started, is this like a private group which we started before it was a label, which was to share music.
Yeah.
And then there's, I don't know how many people are in there, a few hundred. And from that, I think, is where we started kind of mining
people's tracks
and seeing who wanted to make things, pushing people to make things. Every time we see
pushing, a lot of pushing.
Every time we see people, we're like, hey, how's that going? release a track.
finish the tracks.
Yeah.
But I think now as well, it's like at the point where initially we were mainly farming tracks from people that we knew or friends of friends. And now people will send us things, like people that we don't know will send us snips or full tracks that they believe might work for the label. And sometimes that aligns with what we want and sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, just a warm, hey, this might work, or maybe better to send this to X label or someone else that might suit better.
And like a lot of the time things are in states where they send ideas which are great, but it's like this could use a little mix and we're happy to like do mixes or masters for people who are like coming into things but need a little bit of extra.
Yeah, everyone's coming from different backgrounds in terms of how maybe professional they are in terms of finishing their tracks and how like radio ready the tracks might actually be.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's an incredible thing, like even pushing people to be able to release stuff. And, you know, if for a lot of people, is it sometimes their first time having a track out?
Yeah, for Cooper, that was definitely their first release. Full stop. Same with Yikes. A lot of these people have been like DJs and artists and performers in their own right, but yeah. Or if it's like sometimes it's their first release as that name, like Image System, who's on both the compilations, has made music and
has made like extensive amounts of music in the past, but yeah, on various pseudonyms and anonymity.
But with, say, Cooper, and Yikes, and Mobius, they all brought, like, almost kind of whole things to the table and maybe just wanted a little bit of extra guidance and assistance in a little bit of arrangement and then definitely mixing and mastering.
Yeah, cool.
Those tracks.
That's an incredible service to be able to provide people, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I studied music at WAPA, so I can do that, which is nice to be able to
bring that back to the community.
Yeah, bring it to other people. God bless Centrelink.
That's so the origin is that you started as a group just sharing music. That's incredible. When did it kind of become a label?
This was definitely over like the first wave of COVID when it first kind of initially hit Perth. Was I think we all just kind of collectively just sent the same message to each other over Facebook. Being like, oh, we should release some music, you know, just to like kill some time because I was still studying as well. I had just so much time on my hands to do basically anything.
I think that was the impetus for the first compilation, was how much more time everybody had, you know, like a lot of the people in the group and a lot of the people that wanted to make these tracks or put them on a compilation were club kids who were normally going out every weekend and then working or studying during the week. And then suddenly COVID comes and everyone's doing a lot more from home or clubs are closed and we're not going out as much. So people will finally finish a track and, you know, at least gives you maybe some hope for the next time that we're all in the club together. Yeah. We might be able to hear these tracks that are actually going to get released.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pent up energy there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an incredible thing. Where did the name come from?
That's all you, Connor.
Yeah, I was very jet lagged in Dubai on my techno pilgrimage to Berlin in 2017. And I was walking through in one of the Dubai malls. They've got like the big aquarium and I just had like the midnight elevator. It was just literally an elevator that went to the second floor and it just said midnight elevator. I was like, oh, that's a good label name.
Nice. When did that happen? During COVID?
Oh, no, 2017.
Right.
This is, before... Yeah, before everything kind of, kicked off.
Nice. So, it was a group called Midnight Elevator.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, tell us about, well, each of you, what are your backgrounds in music, whoever wants to start? How long have you been doing music and what brought you to this point?
I can start. Yeah. I've been doing music in, like, various capacities for, like, 10 plus years. I was in bands and stuff, really into like shoegazy music, trying to do a newer new gazy stuff. And then I started making dance music, really fell in love with interesting club music, started making house and techno and everything in between. I think what interests me is always like the outskirts of a genre, nothing too specific. Like, and then I studied at WAPA and released some music under PDMC. I was going by Cola Beer for a minute, which I thought was funny and a nice little Australiana tip.
Very nice Australiana tip. Is that one of the... Because there's all different ones in every state, right?
Specific like to WA.
It is specific to WA. Very good.
I think that'll do me.
I mean, I was in a crappy psych rock band when I was... would have been like 19, and I think like the band members kind of forced me to go buy Juno 106 back when they were still affordable to buy, and I bought one and then immediately quit the psych rock bands and just kind of just made ambient music for a while, like just kind of, yeah, just bedroomy, just kind of like, you know, slapping your hands on the keys. And then kind of wasn't until, I think it was probably meeting you guys that I started kind of making music with like drum beats in it. And then, it just kind of just spiraled out from there, really. I mean, before being in the band, I had zero musical experience besides just going out to beach raves, really.
Nice. And Georgia?
I would say I have very little musical background, really, in terms of making. I would call myself more of a music pusher or a music enabler, more of an attender of gigs, but a big appreciator of music and able to DJ, although, you know, not a regular DJ. So,
when did you start, like, falling in love with dance stuff?
I think I started going to dance gigs in probably 2016, and prior to that had mainly been, like, a punk gig attendee. But I just met so many people, and I think so much of what made me fall in love with dance music and going to dance gigs was the community. Like, yes, I love dance music and I love listening to dance music, but for me, the community in Perth is so unparalleled. It feels like anytime you walk into a dance music gig, you see so many people you know, but even the people you don't know, it feels like you have this kind of underlying sense of comfort with them and support. And I think that's so much of where my love for dance music stems from.
That is something I've discovered in recent years as well. There's something about the dance scene of Perth that is really close and beautiful and comforting and a really welcoming space. And especially like as someone who is more very live music focused myself, like walking in, I never feel out of place and I always feel welcome, which sometimes if you go to live music gigs, it might not be as welcoming. Yeah,
some places feel more clicky than others. I think that's part of the beauty of Perth, and maybe something that we undervalue is how close the community is. It really does feel safe in the way that we treat each other. You know, like even Berlin, like the mecca of techno, and where we all pilgrimage in the winter. Right. It's beautiful, but you definitely lose that sense of community. You walk in and you know nobody, and it is a stark contrast. Yeah. So whilst the music might be excellent and the mixing excellent, the community just does not feel how it does in Perth. And I've never been anywhere else that feels like Perth in terms of club environments.
Yeah, right. When did you all meet?
I think George and I met in late 2016.
Yeah.
And then I've been trying to think about that with Connor.
Yeah. I think we just went to the Bird a lot. I just remember seeing you at the Bird a lot at like band gigs.
I think
and
it's
like
around
house gigs.
2017.
Yeah.
Is around the time. And then, exactly. Your classic like Peekaboo, the Bird. Yeah, we all went to like warehouse raves, beach raves.
It's
club
just,
nights.
Yeah, literally just going to every single thing we went to, really, and just seeing each other.
Yeah, I think that often happens with labels and bands and stuff. It's like, oh, you're just at all the things that I want to go to. And you're like, well, because we're into the same types of music and,
It's this relationship of proximity.
Yeah.
Also, you and Connor's deep love for talking about synthesizers in
Oh, yeah.
excruciating detail at times.
Yeah, yeah. We won't do that.
Yeah, we won't do this. Sorry, Mark.
I would have nothing to ask you about that.
Sounds like a different language. It's just letters and numbers.
I do have met enough musicians that do that in various instruments to know that I would know nothing. And I just nod and be like, cool. I'm stoked that you're so stoked on this.
Yeah.
So the label kind of became a global label around the global pandemic. What was that period like? What were you guys doing at the time, and how did it affect you?
I think a lot of the time I always try and transcend moments which are weird or unpleasant. So for me, it was like, let's do something interesting. Let's do something good. Let's create. I mean, a lot of dance music is that. It's like forgetting your problems by dancing, by like the catharsis of letting your body deal with whatever's going on. So I think
by the time you were studying, so I guess it affected you in some ways less.
Yeah.
Because it didn't really affect your work overly.
Yeah, I mean, I had literally, right before the pandemic hit, like, quit my warehouse job of, like, 3 years and started to study, like, social sciences, so community service and mental health at TAFE. So, it was, I don't know, for me, that kind of period was actually quite nice. It was kind of like, you know, starting afresh almost. Yeah. You know, like, I've got all this time to study, all this time to focus on music now. And, yeah, it's all kind of worked out pretty well.
And I was
yeah.
already working from home, so it really did have very little impact on me in that sense. It was more of the social sense.
And yeah.
We really felt how tightly knit our share house was during that time. You know, it was like, oh, suddenly we are all home. You really notice that there's five of us in this one house. But aside from
wow.
that.
Wow.
But, yeah, it's a good time to, like, reflect and to refine what your goals are, and I think that turned out really well for us because now we're in a place where we've done quite a lot in the last few years and really proud of it.
Yeah. The dance music scene, like how did, I guess it was pretty grateful. And it's really awesome that you kind of found this in that time or were able to jump into a project and bring it to life and something that has, you know, given so many opportunities to people is really special. What was it like for the rest of the community and scene, dance scene, during that time, do you think? Like, what were people doing? Were you just connecting more?
Yeah, because there's, like, I want to say at least 4, maybe 5 other labels / collectives that all came up at the same time. So, there's, like, Pneumatic, Hyde Park Hi-Fi, Backtrack, even things like Club Jewels, I feel like. Ono Records.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just
yeah, that definitely birthed some new gigs and new labels.
Mm-hmm.
Like a kind of phoenix situation. But
yeah, and then the restrictions creating this kind of essentially like blocking anyone else from coming in puts more focus on the local scene and allows people to like get more. Yeah, I think that was really nice actually to have.
I think that was my favorite thing about COVID, to be honest. And I've said this to a few people. It's like before this, you know, we had maybe too much respect for internationals and nationals coming over in comparison to local acts. And it was nice to see people being given headline spots who would not normally, but then having the crowd that was appropriate. And also I feel like because the restrictions were kind of changing and then coming back and then things like that, people were so excited to party for a while. There was this sort of like golden months of people just wanting to be out and wanting to listen to those artists. And it was pretty amazing to see those people being given the respect that they deserve and have always deserved. And maybe especially in Perth, yeah, I think we can be a little too inclined to overlook how valuable the locals are, you know?
Yeah.
Well, there's that phrase, the Great Australian Cringe, which is basically that we think that anything that's from here sucks, which, like, granted, a lot of it does. But, like, it shouldn't innately be worse because it's here, whereas, like, we assume that something that's from Europe or from America is better, when I think a lot of the time when people do come here, they're pleasantly surprised by the energy of both the artists and the crowds and...
Yeah, the Great Australian Cringe.
Yeah.
I like that. I've never heard that before, actually.
Yeah, there's like papers on it and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Plus, for a while, Perth was the one place that you could party.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That was huge. We were Perlin.
Like. Yeah, exactly. We became Perlin. Friends who were, like, in, you know, went to live in Berlin or Melbourne or whatever so they can live up their life were green
suddenly
with
not
envy.
So smug. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a nice time. What's the scene like now, post-COVID?
Oh, it's like, it's still raging, I would say. Like, I would say there's definitely less punters, like, heading to gigs, but I would say the amount of gigs that we have to choose from now is, like, just too much. Like, yeah. There's too much going on. Like,
yeah.
In a good way. In a bad sense.
I think from a dance music perspective, Perth has an issue with venues in terms of, like, what venues are available, what venues are open late. Like, there seems to always be a push-pull on where people can go and where people want to go. That's one of the difficulties. Post-COVID, though, obviously, there's a huge number of artists coming back over from the Eastern States or from Europe or the States. So
yeah, I mean, those 5 a.m. licenses are few and far between.
Yeah, I know all about those. It's also, like, they are insane. Like, the nightclubs during COVID were the devil.
Yeah.
No one, it was like they were the first things to get shut down, the last things to come back. The restrictions on them were crazy. And there's a few of them that are, like, essentially live music venues. They just open later or, you know, are almost operating in the same capacities as places like The Bird or Mojo's or something like that, which is a strange thing. And then also a lot of Perth don't know how to dance late anymore.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a thing. I think there's I think maybe COVID, you know, people lost their legs a little bit, maybe. Yeah. Like, they forgot how to dance. Yeah. It's been interesting, though, like, running gigs during COVID. We hosted our first gig under Midnight Elevator, like, just coming out of the restrictions. And we still had, like, restrictions on how many people could be in the club. And I almost think that that was a bit of a blessing, though. It definitely took the pressure off a little bit. It was like, okay, well, if the maximum we can have is maybe 200 people.
No, it was 120.
No, one. Okay, 120 people. You're like, that's
sold out.
That
easy.
Seems achievable. Like, so it allowed kind of a push to natural growth with a little bit less stress.
What was that event like? Was that your first time throwing event? That was the first time throwing event as Midnight Elevator?
As Midnight Elevator, yeah. So we'd had previously done events as, like, PDMC Presents and...
Yeah, The Bird.
We've also run some...
It's a beautiful place to cut your teeth in events and... Yeah.
Organic free parties.
free
range. It's where we got our start. But... Yeah, that was our first time running an event as Midnight Elevator, was to release the first compilation.
Yeah, cool. What was it like in that time? Was it kind of just, I'm trying to remember my experience of it, but I remember people just dancing and being like, oh, is this okay?
Yeah, it was very awkward and you had to, like, re-remember how to speak to people.
Yeah. And people would say, what have you been doing? And I don't know, nothing.
That's great.
Yeah, small talk was out the window.
Yeah. And having a lot of deep emotional thoughts about my life.
So let's talk about that first compilation. What was the idea behind it? Was it just to help people get new music out and celebrate people creating in this time?
Yeah, I would say so. It's pretty, like, bang on, really. I mean, I've always had kind of the thing in the back of my head, and I know probably you guys as well, as, you know, it's always that childhood dream in the kind of music scene to, like, you know, start your own label and, like, put out music. So I guess it was just kind of more so just like, let's see if we can just get it going, really. See if we can just even put something out.
Yeah. And I think Connor and I are DJs. George can DJ a bit. We're all of our friends are DJs. If I die, I've got, like, 100 DJs at my funeral.
It's going to be a great party.
Like, yeah, that whole thing is, like, refining your taste and then, yeah, turning that into a label is, like, let's kind of put your money where your mouth is and show that you can put that out as well. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
I do. Is there a kind of a genre or a style that you wanted, or, like, the ethos of Midnight Elevator that you got to stick to, or do you feel like you can still do anything?
I think a lot of the labels that we really admire, you know, have, yes, there's like electronic is the focus, but it is supposed to intentionally be music that can defy genre tropes and
it's more of a guideline.
Extend what music can be. So classic labels like Warp, or we're really into like Hessel Audio and stuff, where it's like, yeah, they can have electronic music, but then there's also Battles is on Warp and stuff, which is a band.
Yeah.
And like, it's not like we would never do anything that's, yeah, it's a lot of freedom is what I would say.
Yeah, cool. Can I ask about, you don't have to answer this stuff if it's, sometimes it's weird, but financially, how does, it, sure, financially, right, like events should make money. Hopefully they do make money.
Mm-hmm.
But releasing stuff can be tough. Is it like having the two things means are events bringing most of the income?
Yeah. Currently, yes. Yeah.
Events definitely bring in most of the money. But I guess we don't run Midnight Elevator as our primary source of income for any of us.
Yeah.
So whilst, yes, it's important. I think it's important for them to make money in the sense of continuation of the label.
Like, yeah.
I want the events to make money so that we can guarantee that we could do a vinyl pressing, or that we could bring over a specific artist without worrying about going bankrupt post event. Or, you know, it's imperative to me that when we book people, or when we bring people into contract for a specific piece of work, if that's art or installation or whatever that is, that those people are going to be paid. And I guess that's where the financial side of the label is in my mind. It's about making sure that it can continue, making sure it runs like a business should run, and it has, you know, money in the kitty ready to go for unforeseen events, or, you know, an event might not do that well. And some events, you know that you're going to basically either lose a little bit of money or break even, but the point is the event is more important than the sum of its parts, and it's more important that that event goes ahead and does lose those small amounts of money, which we can pay from an event that might have made more, and
yeah,
you know, we're holding back that money obviously to allow that to happen. So yeah, that's kind of,
yeah,
that's how I feel about, yeah, that.
And it's all independent in terms of, we don't have any external funding or anything, so we do it all by ourselves. And then I guess in terms of making sure that the releases don't lose money, is that I can do mixing and mastering myself, and art is usually relatively cheap, and then people just...
We do the promotion.
Yeah, we do the promotion, so we kind of, yeah, back-end it.
And a lot of people aren't necessarily being expected to be paid for their contribution of their track. You know, it's like, well, do you want 1/11th of $200, or should we roll that money towards a future vinyl release or a future event where you can play, and, you know, that seems to be more valuable to people.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, that is an easy way to pay people, is through events. If you're like, the track itself has only made $50, then... Well, we can at least book you to play, and then you can whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for sharing that stuff. I mean, like, with my label, I don't make any money off it, and I'm just investing all my time. But, I have other things that bring in money, and it's so worth it, because I'm helping my friends put out music. And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important. And I feel like that is going to be the answer for every label I chat to. It's like, so many – you're all dedicating so much time to this thing in this community, and you are spending so much time, and like, that time is money, I suppose. And, and it's really amazing.
Yeah. We're lucky that Peter is in a place in his career where you probably give the most time, especially to the actual releases,
yeah,
and in terms of how much musical work you do. But because you were working full time as a musician in general, and as a composer, it overlaps so much with your work that it feels like it all kind of rolls together. And some jobs are obviously getting paid, and then you can pay rent and pay the bills, and then Midnight Elevator maybe not, but then, yeah, you might have a good event. So
yeah, that is one of the perks of, if you can live as a musician, is that you don't really have to have 9 to 5. You can do your things whenever you want, and that goes for the label as well. Like, there's lots of, you know, chats which we're having at midnight, 2 a.m. where we're deciding things for the next one.
Ah, midnight.
Yeah. I mean, we are late yeah. people.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll just get in the elevator at the Rechabite at midnight just to, like, have a little time for myself. I'm like, no, I'm in the midnight elevator right yeah. now. This is it.
Yeah, and when we're booked by other people, we're always like, go on, give us that slot.
All right, I've got a couple of little questions. Throwing to you, Peter, when you're not working in the music scene, you're often behind the scenes on theatre and dance productions.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that recent work includes sound design for Blue Room Theatre, productions Walk and Strut Dances, 2022 edition of Situate City, that collab with Chira Music. How does that work compare to Midnight Elevator stuff?
I think usually the dance stuff has more experimental, ambient, sound designy type things, and potentially even something that's super not usually in my wheelhouse, but I can do it. Like, I studied composition at WAPA, so, like, if you need, like, a string quartet, I can do it. If you need, like, a little jazzy number, I can do it, that kind of thing, which wouldn't necessarily appear in my usual music. The overlap, I think, is that, and I found this like probably second or third year into doing WAPA, is that I shouldn't shy away from my influences as like being really into dance music and allowing that to like push through as reference points in yeah. experimental music. And I did it all through my course and was luckily supported by my coordinators, where they like, I did it in a way where it was respected, which was nice.
Cool.
To like actually be in like a Western canon academic setting and be like, listen to this breakbeat, it's important. So yeah, there's definitely like moments of club music in most of my dance and theater work, but it's not necessarily the main thing.
Yeah. How did you get into that side of it? Was it out of WAPA?
Yes and no. The first thing I did was I did a PDMC launch at The Bird, which was my first EP. And I asked a dancer, Bobby, who has been a longtime collaborator, who actually wrote and starred, directed, did all the things in Walk. And I did the music for that. So we're still working together 4 years later. And they were dancing as part of the EP launch, and I just really enjoyed that collaboration between artists who are, yeah, the music that is made for dance naturally should have dancers dance to it, as like they should have the ability to be seen as the respective artists that they are, which I think is, it's not never done, but like should be done more. You know, there's people who make sure that there's dancers on stage for their, I mean, Big Frida was just here for like the Pride thing at Hyde Park, and I'm there was just dancers everywhere twerking, which I think was cool. And then WAPA does have a nice collaboration thing between composers and dancers where you're encouraged to do at least two collaborations a year with different disciplines as a composer. So film, music, film, dance, theatre, acting,
video games,
anything.
Yeah, cool.
Which I did. Always did more than that. I always wanted to do as many as I can because it's really interesting making music to different concepts, to different ideas, genres. It's fun.
You were set to be part of Perth Festival before it got COVID cancelled, which was like a team up with Good Company. What was it like kind of working on an event with something as big as Perth Festival?
There was a lot bigger chain of command than we're used to. So many people are obviously involved in Perth Festival, and then you have the layers of Perth Festival because it's like layer one, and then the people who were working specifically in your area, which I think was contemporary music, was the area that we fell under. And then we were also brought in by Bentaf, who does a lot within the community. And then obviously we were working with Good Company. So it was just a lot of people to talk to about everything. You know, anytime we wanted to bring anything to the table, it was just a heck of a lot of people to talk to and or to get questions answered. So, I mean, that was very different to what we're used to. It was amazing because the scope could be so big. You know, what we were able to do was so much bigger than what we're normally able to do, which was pretty amazing and pretty sad that it didn't go ahead. We actually went in to the venue where it was being hosted because it was only cancelled like 2 or 3 days prior.
Yeah.
So everything had basically been set up. So we went in on, I don't know, Thursday night and just had a look at what would have been and had a drink and said, this is kind of sad, but...
Yeah, there was this amazing light installation which had clearly cost the good part of $100,000 or whatever. And it was beautiful and... Yeah, we just had to sit there, have a drink and look at it and go down. That would have been fun.
Yeah. But it was amazing and hopefully those opportunities come up in the future again.
What's the future of Midnight Elevator?
Well, like most, I think as far as we've got is next year, and that is we have some releases in the works. One's pretty much done and should be announced relatively soon, maybe not over Christmas because things are too weird.
Yeah.
Probably wait till next year to announce it, but it's like essentially done. And then we'll release at least, I'd say, one more next year, if not two. And then we have events that we've started to line up, which we're really excited for. Again, probably can't announce anything yet.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, there's things coming and, you know, fingers crossed for a vinyl release in the imminent future.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I guess that's the next growth
hurdle
for us.
Yeah, well, so we just recently had our first internationals that we brought over, Adam Pitts and Lacine, who are like UK DJs who we've been on like our playlists for a few years. So that was really nice to bring people over and kind of show them what's going on here. And I think they left
They had a great time.
They had a great time. And I feel like, yeah, from that, they've introduced us to other people who we've been speaking to online. And I feel like we just want to build more international connections and
grow Perth. Keep sending people music from Perth.
Yeah, exactly.
Force them to listen to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Lived in Melbourne shadows for too long. We can stand on our own two
feet. We're coming out. We're growing up, Mum and Dad. Like, that's it. We're getting Perth out there.
I want to quickly, let's talk about the balance of events versus releases because they're so different. But the beauty of like a label like what you're doing is they tie together so seamlessly and so perfectly that it's almost like you have to do both. Do you feel like you have to do both or you want to do both or...
I feel like we want to do both. I don't feel like we have to do anything.
Yeah, but like you say it does tie together really nicely.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's...
I wouldn't want only one to be our focus either, though.
And they're also quite different. How does that work within the three of you? Is there certain people that are focused on different parts?
Yeah, I would say you are definitely. Peter is definitely very focused on the ensuring that people's tracks are finished, ready to go, and mixed and mastered. Like, that is very much your role.
Yeah, Connor.
Not your
and I,
only role, but definitely your role within the
community. Yeah, Connor and I do most of the curating for the releases.
Yeah.
And then you do a lot of the, like, producing of the events, so making sure that we've got, like, installations sorted and...
handle some of the... more boring back of house bookkeeping side of it.
Accounting and all that.
Yeah. So I don't know.
The most important person in a label.
And then we all kind of contribute to the, I guess, marketing side of things and the social media side of things, which is for all of them. I guess there's a lot of overlap in terms of how you promote things across both releasing and hosting events.
Mm. And yeah, like with who plays, I think it's becomes a natural thing of like a lot of the people that make the music are also DJs or they're like people who are people that play the stuff on RTR and like our music. So, yeah. Like, yeah, Kaylin's played a few times and Willie Slade and Nina BC. And
just people we like. We always try and book people who we think are passionate about music. I think when it comes to booking people to play for events, that is my number one criteria. Do you care about what you're doing?
Mm.
If you don't, then, you know, maybe this isn't a gig for you.
Yeah, and I think the music is kind of for and by club kids, so it's like naturally we know what we want from those spaces.
Yeah.
And what people who are like us want from those spaces, and it's just a matter of doing it.
Where do you all see yourself 10 years from now? Where will Midnight Elevator be?
Ooh.
That's a good question.
Hopefully lots of side labels.
Oh, side labels.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was like in between the first and the second release that Connor was already talking about second side labels and stuff. And I was like, we do not even have like a discography yet. Yeah. And he's like, what about Silicon Collapse? And I was like, that is a cool name.
Yeah.
You trademarked all those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. If someone else does that, I'm going to be upset.
No, it's okay. It's on the podcast now.
On the podcast. All right. Yeah. Patent pending.
It's intellectual property.
Yeah, I think, yeah, more releases, more events. I think I can see us doing this 10 years from now. Definitely. Yeah,
definitely. Hopefully just bigger and better, and hopefully we've successfully gotten Perth further out there, and the people who are currently releasing music are hopefully still releasing music, especially, yeah.
Some
of them are amazing, and I hope that they are just bigger and better in 10 years.
Because we're always learning. Like, the whole process is just learning and, you know, navigating whatever the music industry is, you know, between, yeah. Like, a bunch of people who, yeah, you're speaking to initially through emails and you're like, you're trying to work out what they want or whatever, and understanding press and,
yeah,
speaking to venues, all of that.
Yeah.
It's like a definite learning curve, and we get better all the time. So I think 10 years from now, we're going to be sharp.
Yeah. Well, it does always change too.
I was going to say 10 years from now, maybe we'll have like TikTok promotion down, but TikTok will probably be done by then. I know.
10 years. It's like six apps before. Oh.
Well, you haven't been doing this. Well, Midnight Elevator hasn't been around that long. It's pretty new as a label. You've achieved a lot in a small amount of time. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm very excited to see what the future brings.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, our pleasure. Cheers for having us, Mark.
A big thank you to Peter, Georgie and Connor from Midnight Elevator for joining us today. My name is Mark Neal and I'm your host. Our producer is Danielle Raphael with production consultation by Matthew Perrott. Our artwork is by Lyndon Blue. Music is by Michael Strong. This podcast was recorded and produced on Wujak Noongar Budja. We pay our respects to elders past and present. This land was never ceded. We'll be back next fortnight, where we sit down with Sam Ford and have a chat about his label Tone City Records.